He railed against what he called, and I quote Bill Barr, the homosexual agenda. He railed against, quote, militant secularists. And he said over and over again, basically, this is a struggle and the church has to regain its place at the top of our government and our society. And how are we going to win that battle? And so I argue that's why Bill Barr, A, wanted the job, and B, was willing to kick down all these norms and all these principles in order to get there, because he's really an extremist.
That is former federal prosecutor and CNN legal analyst Ellie Honig talking about former Attorney General Bill Barr. Ellie has a new book out called Hatchet Man. It's not a feel-good book. It's actually very, very good. And Ellie has a great conversation with me about what makes Bill Barr tick, some of his extreme views, which really will blow you away. A lot of it explains some of his behavior and actions during the Trump administration. So really cool conversation with Ellie. Glad to have him on. On a different note, we need to stop with these requests from companies and businesses for surveys after I buy a product. Every single product I buy now, I somehow get a text or an email requesting me to answer how I liked the experience of buying the product, okay? I don't want to get a coffee at Dunkin' Donuts and then have to fill out a 7-page survey about my experience. You know what my experience was with your product? It sucked because you sent me a survey asking me about my experience with your product. Let's do this. You guys can tweet me or Facebook or Instagram me at Paul Mercurio, M-E-C-U-R-I-O. And let's take a survey of our own and tell me how many people like filling out the surveys. Okay? So send me some of your thoughts at Paul Mercurio on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. And enjoy Ellie Honig. My guest this week worked as a federal and state prosecutor for 14 years and prosecuted and tried cases involving violent crime, human trafficking, public corruption, and more. Is a senior legal analyst on CNN and does a terrific job, and is a Rutgers University scholar. I have no idea why somebody this smart is on my show, but it's nice to have Ellie Honig on the show. Great to have you on, Ellie.
Thanks, Paul. It's great to be on with you. And remember, Rutgers is just a state school. So, I'm not going to intimidate anybody with my intellect.
Come on. You have a great book out, and a ballsy book. And I can say that because it's my show, Hatchet Man, which focuses on the disaster that is Bill Barr. But I did want to say, we were talking off air for a second, you know, being a former attorney myself, I think you do a terrific job on CNN. You don't talk down to the viewer, but you explain things in a way that's very succinct. And some of these things are not easy to explain. And I also know what it's like to be on those shows and you've got a producer talking in your ear and you've got 3 minutes and blah, blah, blah. So I really think you do a great job.
I really appreciate that. Thank you. First of all, so speaking of being succinct, I think the calling the book ballsy, that's the first time I've heard that phrase used with it. I've heard variations of that, but I'm going to use that. I like that. That is high praise for the book. Thank you. Yeah, you know, it's an interesting thing transitioning from being a trial lawyer like I was, a prosecutor, to being on air. A lot of it carries over, right? The idea that you have this audience that's intelligent and interested and wants to know, but they're not lawyers. And so right. You have to break it down in a way that's digestible and understandable. And like you said, I mean, you know, succinct, right? 3 minutes. Yeah. That's a lot of segments are 3 minutes long. So,
yeah.
It's a skill. I work at it, but I do think the trial lawyering sort of transitions nicely into it.
Yeah. Well, you really do a terrific job. And, you know, we were talking about, you know, my having left the law, and I guess you're not practicing much anymore. I didn't really hate the practice of law. I got kind of pulled by this other thing that suddenly just started coming out of me doing writing comedy. And then I ended up on The Daily Show and all that other stuff. But I always say to people, if you're not sure if you want to get a graduate degree, get a law degree, because it teaches you to think a certain way. And I think it's a really valuable degree to have, regardless of what you do with it. But so I want to talk about the book, and I'm so glad you wrote this book. I read it and have been seeing you talk about it. And I just want to jump in. There's so many great quotes from the book, but one is talking about no prosecutorial experience that he had as an attorney general. He says, you say Barr faltered because he never understood or respected the prosecutor's code. He never properly appreciated what it really means to work as a prosecutor. That is insanity to me, because on a couple of different levels, he was appointed to that position under two different administrations. Does this say that the DOJ over time has just become incredibly politicized, or is it more of a commentary on Barr's political savvy that somebody with no trial experience or prosecutorial experience could have the most important job in the land? How does this happen?
I think it's more the latter, and I was struck by that. And the way I structure the book, as you know, is I tell a lot of first-person stories from my time as a prosecutor, from trials I did and investigations I did. Most of them involve me getting yelled at by a judge or screwing something up or whatever. But the point is, that's how you learn what I call the prosecutor's code. It's like any other profession, whether it's baseball or radio or law firms. Right. Every profession has its unwritten rules, the norms, the ethics, and they're so important when you're a prosecutor. Sure, you have your rules, your laws, your cases, that kind of thing, which are important, but so much of it is just those unwritten rules. And one of the things that struck me about Bill Barr is he never tried a case in his life as a prosecutor. And he's been, as you say, attorney general twice. He was AG from 91 to early 93 under George H.W. Bush, and then later under Donald Trump, almost a quarter century later. So one of the arguments I make in the book is Bill Barr, because he never worked hands-on as a prosecutor, he never tried a case, he never stood in front of a judge, he never got yelled at, he never had a defense lawyer picking him apart. He didn't learn those lessons. They didn't mean anything to him. He didn't understand the lessons. And the two big ones are credibility, that as a prosecutor, you just tell the truth, like it or not, and independence. You never inject politics into prosecutorial functions. And Bill Barr broke both of those and many others in a way that I just couldn't sit there and watch. And that sort of spurred me to write this book.
Well, you know, what I like about it is that, It's and your commentary too about him when we were in the throes of that disaster that is the Trump administration, that some people would sort of dance around it. You called it for what it was, which I really, really liked and was important, and I was aware that Barr had no true trial experience and couldn't quite figure out why until I read your book. Because you describe Barr as a culture warrior, right? He was motivated by this pro-religious, anti-secularism, this Federalist Society view of society. And that explains, it almost to me, it's like he'd be like, it doesn't really matter what the position is. It wasn't about that position and doing the best job in that position. It was about that position allowing him to advance his own agenda in this larger agenda. That's what I'm taking in part from the book. Is that sort of the feel of that? Is that right?
Exactly. So one of the big questions people have about Bill Barr is why? Why would this guy who had been AG once already, he already had that line on his resume, who had plenty of money, right? We dug into it. He's worth tens of millions of dollars. As Forbes estimated his value as $40 million at the time he took the job. Getting up there in years, semi-retired, why would he voluntarily thrust himself into the middle of the maelstrom of the Trump administration? Remember, he came in midway through. He just came in after the 2018 midterms. And my answer is really two things. But Bill Barr has had very extreme legal views, and then I guess I would say cultural views of what the role of the AG's office should be. On the legal side, Bill Barr was extreme. He was, a Federalist Society guy who believed in what people call the unitary executive theory. And that basically just means the executive branch should be more powerful than the courts and Congress. And the executive branch, including DOJ, they don't just work for the president, they are the president. And so the president basically has complete control over DOJ, something I object to, and I think a lot of people who were properly raised at DOJ disagree with. As a result, Bill Barr got in the job, and he really overextended. I mean, he pushed this sort of all-powerful presidential view to such a ridiculous extreme that he constantly lost in the courts. But the deeper thing that really surprised me when I dug into this book is that Bill Barr's a real culture warrior. And I don't mean he's a deeply religious person. I mean, he is, but I have no problem with that. But Bill Barr's view is that religiosity, or as he put it, and I quote, God's law ought to be the supreme law of this country. And as you say, he railed in things that he wrote and gave in speeches in the 90s. He railed against what he called, and I quote Bill Barr, the homosexual agenda. He railed against, quote, militant secularists. And he said over and over again, basically, this is a struggle and the church has to regain its place at the top of our government and our society. And how are we going to win that battle? And so I argue that's why Bill Barr, A, wanted the job, and B, was willing to kick down all these norms and all these principles in order to get there, because he's really an extremist.
And he found a bedfellow in Trump, who clearly had a view of the presidency unlike anyone else in that sense. And it's funny, you know, because you say, you know, he had extreme views. I mean, just his whole career has been highlights. You know, in 1992, he launched a surveillance program to gather records of innocent Americans' international phone calls. He wrote this famous report, The Case for More Incarceration, which argued for increased incarceration rates and the creation of a national program to construct more prisons, and just had this horrible quote about the benefits of increased incarceration would be enjoyed disproportionately by Black Americans. I don't know anyone who goes to prison for the first time. By the time you go to prison, you're a pretty bad guy. Like, there is a clearly male, white male agenda that goes along with this idea of a powerful executive branch. Where does this come from? Because in some of my research on him, it's hard for me, you know, you can track where he went to school and so forth. He kind of had a similar schooling that you or I did, but where does these extremist views come from?
The hints are out there, and you found, you just talked about some of them. We found some others in the things that he wrote and said sort of early on in his career. I think it comes from the way you're brought up. I think, you know, I was asked a very straightforward question on one of my TV appearances that sort of took me aback, but they said, you know, do you argue that Bill Barr has personality defects? And I said, yeah, I do. That's exactly what I say, right?
Exactly,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, being a liar is a personality defect. Being willing to break the rules for your own agenda is a personality defect. And the other thing that I think is worth noting is, you know, Bill Barr has this way of sort of sliding under the radar a bit or getting away with it more than others. Because if you think about who are the biggest enablers of Donald Trump and Donald Trump's sort of malfeasance, you think of the people who are in your face, wagging their fingers, screaming, the bomb throwers, right? The Jim Jordans, the Marjorie Taylor Greens, the Rudys, right? The outrageous circus-like figures. Bill Barr is none of those things. He is soft-spoken. He looks the part of the sort of dignified attorney general. You know, he knows how to dress up his legal briefs so they look official and smart, which they're not always smart. They're always official, but they're not always smart.
Right.
And so, you know, I say in the book, he has this veneer of intellectualism, which is quite easily pierced, and I do in the book. And he also has this sort of, I mean, I refrain from commenting on the guy's looks in the book, except I do point out he has this hangdog demeanor. He has this sort of like, you know, like harmless, like, oh, woe is me kind of look to him. And I think for that reason, he slides under the radar and got away with a lot more. But really, what he did is way more dangerous and damaging than even, let's take Jim Jordan, right? A guy who screams and wags his finger and struts around. Because Jim Jordan's just a congressman. I mean, congressmen have a lot of power, but they're one of 500 or 435, I guess is the number. But Bill Barr was the Attorney General of the United States. You have way more power as the AG than Jim Jordan will ever have as a member of Congress. So it's even worse when Bill Barr does this.
Yeah, and he, you know, in a lot of the ways, like Newt Gingrich, there's a subtlety and a nuance to what they do, which is much more frightening and damaging. Because, you know, if you look, go back to 92, 90, and he's a product. You know, he basically got out of law school and was pretty much in the DC tank, right? So he knows that town. He knows, you know, the Jim Jordans and the Marjorie Taylor Greens, these yahoos that kind of come in and scream and post a lot of things on Twitter. They're not really playing the game the way it needs to be played. The scary thing is he knows how to play that game. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, obviously, like, when he attacked, he took any of the teeth out of the Mueller investigation, right? But at the same time, he lambasted, you know, Ken Starr's investigation of the Whitewater controversy. So, you know, everybody has a short memory in DC. He knows how to play this game. And you say that, He's upset our constitutional balance of powers, rendering the president unaccountable and untouchable. How do we get back? Do we get this back? What is the fix? I know you have a chapter where you set out 9 things the DOJ has to do, but has he done damage for good to this, our system?
So first of all, he really is. It's interesting that you harken back to the 90s, because you and I are probably about the same age. And I remember the emergence of the 1990s, the Newt Gingrich style culture warrior. And Bill Barr brings a lot of that. And like you say, he knows how to push and pull all the levers of power. I mean, the way he got the job the second time as AG is he wrote this memo, unsolicited, nobody asked him, but he knew what it would do, basically saying, in my view, the Mueller investigation is fatally misconceived, was his exact quote, meaning fatally, meaning dead. Sure enough, Donald Trump got wind of that. Sure enough, Donald Trump's eyes lit up. He said, oh, there's my guy. And sure enough, that's exactly what Bill Barr did. So he knew how to put himself, he knew how to, you know, pull those levers of power in D.C. Bill Barr has absolutely done lasting, long-term damage to DOJ. That said, I have faith that DOJ can and will eventually regain its footing. I do lay out a bunch of policy prescriptions. You know, they need to change this policy and have that law, adopted. But really more important, and I close the book on this, is DOJ needs to just get back to its core principles. And a lot of that involves just hiring better people. I talk about humility. Humility is a big thing that you learn. I learn, and I give a couple of trial stories, things where I had disappointments at trial. And I tell a story at the end about a famous mob case that I did where we didn't get a conviction, John Gotti Jr. And I was sort of crestfallen about that. And I tell the story of how that happened. And I went in to talk to the judge, which was a thing we did in New York. And the judge said, look, you guys put on a great case. He said, but the jury just wasn't having it. And because it was the fourth trial of John Gotti Jr., among other reasons, he said, and you know what? He said, it's not about you. And it's not about your one loss record and your ego. It's about the system. You're part of a system here. The jury rendered its verdict, and we respect that. And he said, take it as a lesson in humility, and a little humility can be a good thing now and then. And that sort of harkened back to a lesson I learned in my very first trial. And Bill Barr really, really lacked in humility. I mean, he's incredibly arrogant. The things he said, the positions he took, the way he would scoff at the media. Remember, history is written by the winners.
Right.
The way he went into an interview with Wolf Blitzer, which you may remember, shortly before the election, and lied about election fraud and was very sort of condescending and scoffed at Wolf.
I was screaming. I was screaming at the television at that point. I literally said, "You're our attorney general. What are you talking about?" Yeah. My wife's like, "Why are you yelling?" I'm like, "I've lost my mind."
And when Wolf appropriately pushed back and said, "What's your proof for any of this?" Bill Barr didn't have any. He just said, "Well, it's just stuff I know."
Right.
But Bill Barr also approached the job with this arrogance that he is in charge. He's the attorney general, but that doesn't empower you to lie. It doesn't empower you to cut the knees out from the prosecutors who handle the cases. And he got to the point at the end where he was openly sort of attacking his own prosecutors. At one point he said, I don't know who these folks think they are. This isn't a Montessori nursery school where everyone gets to have a say. really arrogant stuff. And I think that really sort of impacted the way he did the job.
Well, I think a lot of this for me is, to quote a nice Jersey boy, Bruce Springsteen, all men want to be rich and rich men want to be king, right? Like, it's never enough, right?
The king ain't satisfied till he rules everything.
And, he figured out the system, then he comes in as a young attorney, and then you go through the system, and then all of a sudden you're attorney general under Bush, and then you're like, oh, and then he sees that there's more power grabs, more and more and more and more. So now he's with this psychotic individual in Trump, who literally wants to sort of, overthrow the government and turn this become king again. And I the vibe that I had gotten from him in your book confirms a lot of this. It's just, to me, it's not about the law. It's even ahead of his, this dystopian view. I think it's a lot of it is his ego. Just, if there's power to grab, he's going to grab it and do anything he can. And that seemed to be confirmed. You have some great anecdotes, and you do a great job in the book of drawing from your own experiences and then sort of applying those lessons to what Barr has done or hasn't done or should have done. But don't you think he's got this sort of insatiable, I don't think he's going away, do you? I mean, where do you see him next? Because I see a guy like you that just power hungry.
Yeah, so first of all, he absolutely had an insatiable appetite for power. And again, he tried to play this off. At his confirmation hearing, he gave this whole deal about, oh, I'm quasi-retired and I don't need this job. And I, when I was first asked, I suggested other people who should do it. I mean, bull. I don't know if this is a swearing podcast, but
yeah,
I'll
you can
BS.
Swear. No, you can say it.
Yeah,
say
BS.
It.
I mean, yeah. I'll keep it at BS. I mean, he went out of his way to write this audition memo. No one asked him to write it. The man wanted power. And by the way, there's not necessarily anything wrong with seeking power, depending on how you intend to use it. The other thing is, I think there's always a really interesting dynamic between Bill Barr and Donald Trump, reflected in Bill Barr's words and actions. I mean, there are definitely people who view Donald Trump in his inner circle, in government, who viewed him as this sort of mystical, all-powerful, you know, wonderful, unique being. I don't think Bill Barr viewed Donald Trump that way. I think Bill Barr viewed Donald Trump as a vehicle, as a vessel,
exactly.
A person who generally was aligned with Bill Barr, you know, not in as intellectual a way, but generally on board with the idea that the president should be totally untouchable. I mean, Bill Barr, you take one look at that guy, you go, well, there's the guy for me.
Right.
And so Bill Barr, I think, more used Donald Trump. Now, where is Barr going next? I mean, step one for Bill Barr is he's on an image rehabilitation tour. He's giving softball interviews right now where he's reminding people that he stood up against election fraud. Yeah, you did, Bill Barr, in December after it was way too late after
exactly.
Spent 6 months fanning the flames of election fraud, which I meant, you know, I put all that in my book. The fact that in December he did stand up and say no election fraud, but also you can't tell that part of the story and leave out the fact that for 6 months leading up to the election, he was fanning those flames. So I think Bill Barr, A, is trying to reclaim, you know, trying to whitewash history and get his reputation back. He's got his own book coming out in 2022. I'm sure that'll be self-examination. I'm sure coming there.
I'm sure.
I mean, I'm already, let me predict the title. It's going to be called something like, you know, The Way of Justice. Or, you know,
oh my God.
One of these gross, hired duty or something like that. with an airbrushed photo of himself looking important on the cover. But, you know, get his book and get mine and make your own decision.
Exactly.
That's what I'll say.
Well, listen, I will encourage everybody to read your book. It's great. I would encourage everybody to buy Bill Barr's book and use it to prop up your coffee table. So it really is a great, it's an important, I don't use this word often, but it's an important book. People should grab it if you haven't. It's Hatchet Man. It's available everywhere, I'm sure. Keep up your great work on CNN as a legal analyst. You do great work, and we'll have you back on again. I'd love to talk to you some more and just check in with you from time to time when the world is blowing up and we can, as a couple of lawyers, we can, go back and forth and see if we can come up with any answers to this crazy stuff that's going on. But love to have you back on again soon.
Thanks for having me, Paul. That does tend to be when people come to me when the world is blowing up. So I'd be happy to join you next time that happens.
All right. Sounds good. Ellie Honig. Hatchet Man's the book. All right. There you go. That's Ellie Honig. Hope you enjoyed that. And don't forget, send me your thoughts on these surveys that we all are getting whenever we buy a product at Paul Mercurio, MECURIO, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I'd love to hear what you think, and I'll let you know what the feedback is on the next episode. All right, have a good week, everybody.